listener production. Hello, welcome to The Briefing. I'm Sasha Barbagat. Four people have been charged following a terror attack that was Russia's deadliest in 20 years. At least 137 people were killed and 100 more were wounded at Moscow's Crocus City Hall late last week. The four appeared in court looking like they had been beaten. One was in a wheelchair and appeared unresponsive. The four were charged with committing an act of terrorism. Russian President Vladimir Putin has blamed Ukraine, although it is widely believed a terrorist group from Afghanistan, ISIS-K, is behind it.
In jihadi circles and mainstream Muslim circles as well, there's great antipathy to Russia. Russia's seen as particularly cruel and brutal to Muslim populations.
As a consequence of the attack, France has raised its terror alert to its highest level, with the French president saying ISIS-K has also recently been targeting France. In this episode of The Briefing, we find out just who ISIS-K are and if there's any truth to Putin's claims that Ukraine is behind this. That is coming up later in the episode. First, though, today's headlines with Bensyon Siebert. It's Tuesday, the 26th of March.
Good morning, Sasha. The UN Security Council has called for a ceasefire in Gaza for the first time. 14 countries, including Russia and China, voted for the motion, which also urges the unconditional release of all hostages taken in Hamas's October 7 terrorist attack in Israel. The United States has vetoed several ceasefire motions in the Security Council to protect its ally, Israel, but abstained from voting on this one. US Ambassador to the UN, Linda Greenfield Thomas, said this.
This resolution rightly acknowledges that during the month of Ramadan, we must recommit to peace. Hamas can do that by accepting the deal on the table. A ceasefire can begin immediately with the release of the first hostage. And so we must put pressure on Hamas to do just that.
Israel's responded, cancelling an upcoming visit by delegates to the White House. However, its defense minister, who is already in Washington, D.C., will continue with planned meetings. Israel has killed 32,000 people in Gaza since the October 7 attacks, in which more than 1,200 Israelis were killed and 253 hostages were taken. Now, Israeli delegates were due to meet with U.S. officials in Washington, D.C. to discuss Israel's threats of a ground invasion in Rafah, which is the southernmost city of Palestine, where there are 1.4 million refugees currently sheltering with nowhere else to go. Now, the U.S. was having them there to discuss alternatives to a ground offensive. So that is the meeting that has been cancelled, Bensyon.
Yeah, and White House spokesperson John Kirby has insisted that the U.S. abstaining from this Security Council vote represents no change in policy, but it's clear that pressure over the ongoing killing of civilians in Gaza has forced exactly that. Donald Trump has been given more time to pay a reduced bond in his fraud case in a New York court. The former president had been previously ordered to hand over $709 million after being found liable earlier this year for repeatedly overstating the value of his assets. But Trump claimed he couldn't find the cash despite approaching 30 financial companies for the bond. Now the judge has lowered the asking price, giving him 10 days to pay the equivalent of $267 million Australian dollars. And just to explain, Trump is paying this bond because he lost this court case and he's appealing. If he loses the appeal, he has to pay that back to the state of New York, along with the rest of the nearly $500 million worth of penalties he's facing.
Boeing's CEO will step down at the end of the year amid growing backlash over a number of safety mishaps. The company has confirmed David Calhoun will not be returning in 2025 and there will be a wider management shakeup. So that'll include Stan Deal. He's president and CEO of Boeing's commercial airplanes unit. He's retiring immediately. While on the board, Chair Larry Kellner has also told the company he doesn't plan to stand for re-election, Bensyon.
Yeah, Boeing has been under intense pressure since January when a panel blew off a brand new Alaska Airlines 737 MAX. Investigators say bolts that help keep the panel in place were missing after repair work at the Boeing factory. Two previous crashes involving its 737 MAX jets in 2018 and 2019 killed 346 people.
Yeah, and David Calhoun has also called this a watershed moment for Boeing, acknowledging that the eyes of the world are on the company at the moment, and rightly so. There are some serious questions that they are looking to answer, and the safety mishaps have caused regulatory oversight as well. The US Aviation Authority did, in fact, ground a bunch of Boeing MAX planes in response to the Alaska Airlines incident. Now, we did cover what's going on at Boeing last Thursday in an episode of The Briefing, so go back and check it out if you want to get up to speed. And a little bit of spicy celeb goss to round us out today. Rebel Wilson has named Sacha Baron Cohen as the person she calls a massive asshole in her upcoming memoir, Rebel Rising. Wilson posted on her Instagram that she will not be bullied or silenced with high-priced lawyer or PR crisis managers. And this is her quote: "The asshole that I am talking about in one chapter of my book is Sacha Baron Cohen." The pair did work together on the 2016 film The Brothers Grimsby. Wilson also claims Baron Cohen is attempting to block the publication of her book.
Baron Cohen strongly rejected allegations of bad behaviour on set, saying these are false claims. Wilson has previously said Baron Cohen kept encouraging her to strip off for a naked scene, which she wouldn't do. He eventually hired a body double, among other allegations. Wilson has also claimed a, quote, massive asshole she once worked with had hired a crisis PR team and started sending her threats after she claimed that they would be the subject of a chapter of her book.
I'm loving celeb memoirs, and that celebs and people in the public eye are blowing the lid off certain things. I mean, we had Britney last year, now Rebel Wilson. I wonder, though, if she's enjoying this publicity in the lead up to it being published. Well, that is all for the headlines. But, Bensian, your chat with Greg Barton about the terror group ISIS-K is coming up next.
We will identify and punish everyone who stood behind the terrorists who prepared this attack against Russia, against our people.
That was Russian President Vladimir Putin speaking after the horrific attack against people in a Russian theatre on Friday. At least 137 people were killed and 100 others wounded after gunmen opened fire in the crowded theatre and set the building alight. Putin immediately tried to pin some of the blame on Ukraine, although that was pretty widely dismissed, and the terrorist group ISIS-K, based in Afghanistan, has claimed responsibility. So what's behind this attack on civilians? Who's responsible? What does it mean for the war in Ukraine, Putin's grip on power, and the world going forward? Greg Barton is the chair of Global Islamic Politics at Deakin University, and he joins us now. Greg, what happened on Friday night?
Well, bearing in mind we don't know all the details, but it appears that four gunmen carrying military assault rifles, dressed in military gear, stormed a very large concert theatre with a packed-out crowd waiting for a veteran rock group picnic on the outskirts of Moscow. They opened fire deliberately, trying to kill people. They then threw explosive devices designed to set the building on fire. So quite sophisticated military-style assault. They were able to get out. The Russians claim they've got these four, along with other people who are supporting them. But certainly seems plausible. Unfortunately, in the process of the attack, the flames took hold, the roof collapsed, there's likely still bodies in the rubble. So shades of the Bataclan theatre attack in 2015 in Paris, and indeed shades of attack of a theatre in Russia 22 years ago. It's not the first time this sort of horror has come to Russia. But Islamic State issued two claims, first with the Amaq news agency, which is their media arm, and then sort of directly. And it seems pretty clear that it was Islamic State responsible. So that's also not the first time Islamic State's launched attacks in Russia. Just this month, Russian authorities say they stopped a plot to attack a synagogue. This is in March 2024. And they've arrested many people, many of them Central Asians, with ISIS links over the last 2 years. And we've had many similar plots across Europe, so this fits a pattern.
So you mentioned the terrorist group Islamic State. ISIS-K has been pinned as those responsible for this attack, although Russian President Vladimir Putin says that Ukraine was involved. How do we know who was responsible?
Well, first of all, the general claim repeated twice from ISIS appears to be broadly accepted as credible. US intelligence, European intelligence, the modus operandi of the attack, this looks almost certain to be an Islamic State attack. Whether it was ISIS-K, the Khorasan Afghanistan branch, or possibly a group that's benefited from association with them but is more Russian-based, we don't know for sure. I would think that strong balance of probability, it's ISIS-K or a group that they've been responsible for nurturing and supporting in inside Russia. One of the things about ISIS-K is not only is it based in Afghanistan, but it draws on support in Pakistan and Central Asia. And of course, there's a long history of bitterness towards governments in Moscow cracking down on Muslim minority populations, including, of course, in Russia's own Caucasus. So that much seems clear. The ISIS-K connection is important for us to know that's confirmed, because it means that we've, you know, our fears about Afghanistan would be confirmed and we need to pay more attention to Afghanistan. But either way, it seems likely there's a link back with ISIS-K.
Why would this terrorist group be so interested in attacking Russia? You mentioned attacks on minority Muslim populations in Russia. Is that the reason?
Yeah, you know, Russia certainly for decades and certainly increasingly the last couple of decades under Vladimir Putin has been a brutal authoritarian regime that cracks down on all sorts of minority populations, sends them off to war, such as the current war in Ukraine, or cracks down on them. But so in the North Caucasus, in Chechnya, in Dagestan, in Ingushetia, that's historically been the site for some really dreadful operations. The internal sort of clampdown of those populations has left horror. So we've got a long history of antipathy. Of course, before that was the Russian occupation of Afghanistan. But more recently, Russia threw out a lifeline to Bashar al-Assad in Syria in 2015. It's almost certain that Assad wouldn't be in charge of what's left of the two-thirds of Syria that he holds were it not for Russian military support, particularly air support. And so in jihadi circles and mainstream Muslim circles as well, there's great antipathy to Russia. Russia is seen as particularly cruel and brutal to Muslim populations. And for groups like Islamic State, Russia is at the top of their enemy list. It's not just America, it's also Russia.
How should we understand the conflict between this group and the Taliban in Afghanistan in relation to this attack in Russia?
Well, you might recall that ISIS emerged out of al-Qaeda in Iraq, but al-Qaeda groups like Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria and what became Islamic State in Iraq and Syria split ways. So there's a big division between al-Qaeda and ISIS. So long story short, the Taliban in Afghanistan, the rulers of Afghanistan today, are close friends and partners. They're literally brothers of al-Qaeda, and al-Qaeda has thrived under the Taliban regime. But Islamic State has become an insurgency. And just as the Americans were attacking Islamic State, Khorasan, and ISIS-K before they pulled out of Kabul, so the Taliban regime has continued to keep up pressure. Nevertheless, despite the best efforts of both the Americans and the Afghan Special Forces and now the Taliban, ISIS-K has become this resilient insurgency entrenched across almost all of the 34 provinces of Afghanistan with several thousand militants and a history just the last couple of years involved in 21 international terror attack plots. So a sharp increase from the year before with 21 attacks, I should say, in the last 12 months. Before that, it was 8 attacks. And before that, they'd only ever been involved in 3 attempted attacks internationally. So there's a sharp uptick in their desire and the capacity to launch international attacks. If it's confirmed that what happened in Moscow on Friday night was an ISIS-K attack, that sort of fits with that pattern.
The US says that it warned Russia that there was this threat from ISIS and that Russia dismissed that warning. Why would Russia do that?
Well, I think, long story short, Ukraine. Despite the fact that Putin has made life miserable for the people of Ukraine, his military campaign, his so-called special operation, hasn't gone well. It's been a sucking hole that's consumed hundreds of thousands of Russian lives, either killed or casualties. And a good chunk of their armored divisions and the military hardware and, you know, a large portion of their high-tech cruise missiles, etc. So it's an obsession for Putin to try and show that he's making progress in Ukraine. That means he's not looking anywhere else. He's directed his security authorities like the Internal Intelligence Division, FSB, to focus on people who are threatening him on the basis of the war in Ukraine. So regime security trumps everything. And that means they weren't paying attention. They certainly didn't want to pay attention to the Americans. And historically in the past, when the Americans issued a warning about a terror group, there would have been quite good behind the scenes cooperation on counterterrorism. That's largely fallen away now. It's not completely absent, but it's become a victim to this obsession with Ukraine.
Is there any reason to believe that Ukraine had any involvement in this attack, or is it very simply Vladimir Putin trying to turn this around into a propaganda piece for his war there?
It's pretty clear that there was absolutely nothing to do with Ukraine. It has to be said that, you know, Ukraine is at war with Russia for good reason. Russia's invaded Ukraine, and that response to Russia has involved not just fighting in Ukraine, but in Russian territory. So the Ukrainian forces have launched multiple attacks against Russian oil refineries, munition dumps well within inside Russian territory. So the fact that they could and might want to launch an attack in Russia is not without precedent. But they never attack civilians in this sort of terrorist fashion. Their modus operandi is not to use suicide or, you know, military-style assaults that are on potentially suicidal missions, indiscriminately targeting civilians. That's not what they do. They know that if they were caught doing that, it would destroy their international reputation. It's not in their interest whatsoever. If this was an attack on a Russian military base, you know, I think we'd be sort of wrestling with balance of probabilities. But this sort of attack on a civilian venue, no reason whatsoever to believe any involvement with Ukraine.
That being the case, what do you think might be the implications for the war in Ukraine of this attack?
Well, as they say, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Putin has egg on his face. He shouldn't have said what he said publicly about the American warnings a week ago when he said this is just a despicable American plot to discredit Russia. That makes him look very foolish now. So if he acknowledges that it was an Islamic State attack, it's politically difficult for him. And also he's left with the problem of how does he respond to Islamic State? He could, and he may yet do this, launch a crackdown on the millions of Central Asians, documented and undocumented, working in Russia. But many of them are working in munition plants, desperately needed because Russia's, you know, turned itself to a wartime economy, trying to produce enough artillery rounds and other munitions, drones, etc., to keep up the fight in Ukraine. So Putin doesn't really want to crack down on Central Asians. He hasn't got the capacity to go after ISIS. Much better to say that this somehow or another was a Ukrainian plot. So perhaps at the moment it appears likely he'll try and spin it as saying, well, yeah, maybe they were terrorists, but the Ukrainians used them. They were a tool of the Ukrainians. They opened their borders, allowed them through. He's claiming that he arrested people, his forces arrested people on the Russian border heading towards Ukraine. Kind of bizarre, because that's the last place in the world you run if you're trying to escape the Russian authorities, because it's the most militarized, most surveilled area. But he will keep on, I think, for the time being, doubling down on this, as long as he can convince most Russians. And of course, Russian media used to have some lively elements, but that's almost completely culled now. It's almost completely under the control of the Kremlin. As long as most Russians buy that guff, then that's good enough for him.
Obviously, Vladimir Putin has just won another term as president in what's widely considered to be a sham election. What do you think this attack and his, I suppose, ham-fisted response to the Americans, at least, what do you think this would mean for him going forward?
Well, you know, wishful thinking would have it that this is the beginning of the end, but I think that's just wishful thinking, unfortunately. Yes, he had a week of celebrations, including you know, fantastic coronation ceremony inside the ancient palaces of the Tsars. Yeah, there was no election. There was a orchestrated piece of theater that now enabled him to turn around and say, look, 87% of people supported me. I've got been a clear mandate. That's all nonsense. This is an embarrassment. It threatens to eat away at the edges of that sort of grand display. Russians, to the extent they supported him initially because he brought stability, then he brought economic growth, and then he brought security. All of those things are falling away at the moment, so he is under pressure. The only way that he can square the circle is to double down on rhetoric against Ukraine and perhaps use this as a way of justifying greater call-up of civilians, conscription. I mean, we've seen this already, even if not in name, in practice, who were forced to go off and fight in Ukraine. Those efforts may increase further. That may be the way he tries to get some benefit out of this crisis.
Greg Barton there. That's all we have time for in the briefing this morning. Check your feed again at 3, where we'll be talking through the latest in brain-computer interface technology. In the meantime, if you like what we do here at the briefing, tell your friends, tell your parents, tell anyone you know looking for a new podcast to listen to about the show. I'm Bension Siebert. Catch you this afternoon.
Listener.